Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio on September 9th, 2020. Thank you for being with us today. We're going to talk to our good friends from COSIN today about back-to-school cybersecurity, a timely show made even more timely by the fact that Hartford Public Schools yesterday had to postpone their opening because of a ransomware attack. All right, so we're going to talk about things like that, all right, cybersecurity and student privacy with two experts from COSIN, Amy McLaughlin and Rod Russo. And, well, I'll bring them on in just a second. I want you all to know that our brand-new back-to-school issue of Equity and Access Magazine, AC&E, is up online at our website, which is ace-e-d.org. It is a powerhouse back-to-school issue facing equity, and we've got solutions, etc. Please go over there and check it out. And while you're there at ace-ed.org, join our consortium, the American Consortium for Equity in Education. It's an industry-supported group, and educators are welcome to join for free, and we want your voice heard over there. It's good stuff, and we're starting at Champions of Equity, and you can see the nominating form over there, etc. So there's a lot doing at ace-ed.org. Our new issue, the back-to-school issue, is up on there. You can go flip right through. It's our online journal and join up with the consortium. We're doing this Education Talk radio show on September 9th. We archive everything at our other website, which is education-talkradio.org. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, it's EduTalk Radio. On LinkedIn, it's Larry Jacobs. Facebook is my name again, Larry Jacobs, or Education Talk Radio. And we change our schedule on every Saturday for this. I'm going to get right into this show today because cybersecurity is a very hot issue. And on that note, I've got the Rod Russo. I was going to say the lovely Rod Russo, and I've got the names mixed up. The lovely Amy McLaughlin, okay, and Rod Russo, who is, I'm sure, even lovelier. I don't know how that could possibly be, okay? Hello there, the lovely Amy McLaughlin. Sorry, Amy. How you doing?
Good morning,
today?
Larry.
Good morning.
How
are you?
Thank you.
And I know you are lovelier than Rod.
Okay. Yes, Amy definitely is lovelier than me.
Rod, I've never met you, but I'm going to take a shot here and say Amy is even lovelier than you are. Okay. Would you agree?
By far, yes.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Got out of that one. That was all right. Okay. Amy is the Project Director of Cybersecurity and Smart Education Networks by Design Initiatives, COSIN, okay, Director of Information Services at Oregon State, okay, where there's fires going on nowhere near you, Amy. I've heard about those fires in Oregon. Not happy. Not happy.
Our air quality's terrible, but, yeah, not quite near me. About 50 miles.
Oh, that's close. That's too close. Yeah, I hope everybody's all right. It is terrible out there in the West right now in California, Oregon, and brother. So Rod, being smart, lives in the great flatlands of Chicago area, right?
Right, but an hour
right, nothing
west
to burn.
Of Chicago.
It burned in 1870, and that was it, Rod. That was the end of it.
Right.
Okay. Community High School District number 99, I love the way Illinois gives us the school districts, your cybersecurity chair at COSIN and your director of technology and information. Tell us about Community High School District number 99. I love Illinois. Where is that?
Yeah, it's in the Downers Grove area, about an hour west of Chicago.
Sure.
And we're a high school district of about 5,000 students. We have two large high schools.
And by the way, I used to live in Chicago for many years, and Downers Grove used to be about 20 minutes from Chicago, but with traffic now, okay, it's about an hour away. Okay, it's unbelievable.
It depends on when
traffic.
You go.
Yeah. If you left in 1972, you would have been there in 15 minutes. Okay,
right.
But not so now. So, Rod, welcome to the show. I really appreciate
it. Thank you.
Amy, please stay safe out there. It's really scary stuff. We see the worst of it here on the news. I live in Maine, guys, but I got to tell you, it's just scary stuff. Cybersecurity, and both of you, and I'll tell you, I read yesterday about the ransomware attack. They seem to have it under control in Hartford, but it just with everything being online these days, what we like to call remote education, okay, it's just crazy out there. The craziest opening of school ever, and I know teachers and administrators are doing the very best they can, okay. Rod, let me ask you, since you're right in the trenches there, all right, 2020 is crazier than every other year. School cyber security has changed because of the pandemic, and some things have remained the same. What's worse? What's better? Rod, I'll start with you, my friend.
Sure, Larry. You know, some of what's changed for us for sure is the number of users that we have working remotely. We're used to having students and staff in the building. So the fact that everybody that we serve has basically now been outside of the buildings, it just increased from a cybersecurity standpoint. It increases our exposure, having to grant VPN access to many more users. Students and staff are using their home networks to connect with our systems, not knowing how well updated those are and what other kind of issues. And also the supporting remotely. Again, we're used to having people that we can support that are a walk away, but having to support folks at home. And kind of a non-technical related thing is there's always this this desire and pressure to select new software tools to be used in the classroom. And what happened as soon as the pandemic hit, Larry, is it's like there was this feeding frenzy, both from the marketing standpoint. Every product under the sun was coming up with a barrage of emails to say, you need to be using our product.
Yep. You're
and
right.
Teachers were responding. So it was a challenge to try to keep that at bay a little bit and still go through our vetting protocols and all of that. So we didn't influx our systems with a lot of unvetted tools.
I am so glad you said that, Rod. Okay, because you know, things were settling down a little bit, in my opinion, from what was the Wild West in terms of apps, et cetera, with EdTech, everybody using whatever they wanted. But that started to settle down, and then this hit. And your point a second ago was so well taken. Every company, okay, hit up everybody to use this. We're doing the best we can. It's free right now. We're going to make it free.
Right.
Et cetera. And everybody did that. Okay, and I know the industry well, as you guys do. From the they meant to do well with it, okay. But the chaos that can create by not going through the educators by not taking it back through the IT department and through school administration. I meant that you're the first person to really bring that up, and I'm so glad you did. Are things settling down now, Rod?
They
great
are
point.
Right. Yeah, the
great
the
point.
The marketing barrage has kind of slowed down, and we've settled into requests are coming through our normal channels. So it definitely feels like both from the external pressure and the internal requests that we're getting, I think both sides have really settled down greatly since we began.
That is good news, and I want to say it again. We all know all these companies, and I'm telling you, I know them. They did it from the goodness of their heart. This is free. You can use this. It works. But it's got to go through IT. Otherwise, it goes nuts. Amy, what are your thoughts? And you're at the college level, for goodness sakes. Is Oregon State all virtual, or what's happening?
We are, 90% virtual going into fall term. Of course, we're a research one university, so we have things like research and labs and technology and science heavy. So those kind of things will continue, but we've managed, it's interesting and it's exciting actually to watch how K-12 and higher ed have been able to pivot to providing a large amount of courses remotely and online, and I want to point out with quality.
With quality is right. And actually I'm going to ask you a question which always makes us laugh. okay? Professors, bless their heart, I went to college. I know tons of professors, okay? Some of them are not the great – they know their stuff, but they kind of lose it sometimes in the classroom. They're just kind of lecturing, et cetera. Just on an average, how do professors do? All of a sudden, they all had to teach online. How'd they do?
I think they did pretty darn well, actually. You know,
good.
Having a job and getting paid is a good motivator.
It certainly is.
And the other thing is a lot of them don't want to get sick, right?
Yeah.
So that combination has been pretty powerful. And if you support them with the right technology and the right tools, most people will adjust. Maybe not with excitement.
And they have adapted.
But.
And this is good news, I got to tell you, because, you know, they are people that can be a little bit reluctant to change. God bless them. And I've got to tell you, to force this issue and make this happen, I think, is really something. I think it's going to be a whole new paradigm shift out there. But nobody can, you know, the beauty of a campus and going to a campus and all that. I was just reading about one of my alma maters, Penn State, in the New York Times today, how empty it is over in State College. It must be empty over where you are, right? Where are you? You're not in Medford. Are you in Eugene?
No,
Eugene?
We're in Corvallis.
Where are you? Where are you?
Corvallis.
Corvallis.
Corvallis?
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Just north
couldn't
of
remember
Eugene.
That. Yeah. Yeah, and it's so gorgeous. So, wow, it's incredible. What do you think of schools, the K-12 world, Amy, as you go through this with COSIN and all that? Do you agree with Rod, or do you have more things going on, changes, et cetera?
You know, I agree with Rod, but I think there's one additional element that I think is really challenging, and that is the psychology of being in your home space and being at school. We behave differently at school than we do at home. And
the things that we
learn at school and apply in school, we maybe don't think about at home, especially, you know, young people who are dealing with computer systems. You know, they go home, they have a lot of freedom, and they go to school, there's some restrictions. So I think some of the things that we've taught people over the years have to be reinforced in the home environment because, you know, you come home, you take off your shoes, you relax, you're more likely to make a mistake. And I think that's true for both teachers and students, more likely to click that email link that you didn't think about because you're in a different environment.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting.
The psychology there is hard.
Yeah, and it's going to be crazier as just over the next 3 weeks, we're going to have to go through another learning curve. You know, as everybody settles into this whole thing and makes this happen. Rod, you brought up something a few minutes ago. Is that your key cybersecurity, that people are using too many of the opportunities that are being available to them? Or what's the one key cybersecurity measure that schools should implement? And I like just make sure everything goes through IT. But are there others? Rod?
Yeah. You know, Larry, I have two, actually, so if you'd let me have two. One is...
You got two.
All right.
That means that also means that Amy gets two.
Okay. One is just awareness. Basically, our humans, our users of our technology are our best line of defense. As much as we all like to think that cybersecurity is a technical thing, it's as much or more a human thing. And when I say awareness, I'm around the phishing awareness. You know, you mentioned ransomware.
Yeah.
That's one of the biggest causes of ransomware. Data privacy, you mentioned earlier, and just the incredible importance and arduous work that we're all having to go through to make sure that that's maintained. So one, I would say, is just to really focus on and make sure that all of your human users are very much aware and pulling their share of the load. And then speaking directly to the ransomware, one of the most important things from a technical standpoint is backups, obviously, but a particular type of backup, Larry, is I've heard it referred to as an air gap backup, which basically means that you periodically are backing up your important data and systems
to a backup device and literally unplugging that device from any network connectivity, cloud connectivity of any kind. So literally you're creating an air gap. So you have a backup sitting somewhere secure, but it's not connected to really anything. That's one of the new ransomware techniques now, is that they, even before they may look to lock up and infect your computers, they will go and search out your backups and try to infect those first. So having that backup that is completely separate and safe and secure is really a critical thing. So
that is great
those
advice.
Are my two.
They were excellent. Thank you, sir. That's incredible. And go ahead, Amy, two or three. I don't care. Go ahead, Amy.
Well, I would agree with Rod's, and then I would add a couple. I do think that user education is super important, and those protected backups you've got to have at this point. That, you know, because that's your restoration point. I've dealt with a ransomware attack on my own systems before, a few years ago, and what saved us was backup and restoration. So I would add making sure that on district-owned devices you have remote content filtering. Helps protect the students, helps protect the device, and helps protect your data, right? Making sure you have students going to dangerous websites. And when I say dangerous, I mean sites that lure people in and actually have malware hidden in the back end. And then I would say the other thing is communications. And by that, I mean having a clear line of communication and direction for teachers and students to contact if they have a concern. Personally, I would rather answer the question, is this email legit, 5,000 times a day than have one incident?
Be careful what you wish for. Be careful what you wish for. Those.
You
never know when a prince of Nigeria will be calling you and telling you your grandfather has a lot of money there in Nigeria. It's just unbelievable.
There you go.
And your point about communication, I was going to ask both of you, but this is key. Have you, and Amy, I'll stay with you, have you sent out a new series of informational texts that give people instruction? Okay, every day as you're learning this, because that communication is key, and I can only imagine IT directors all over pulling their hair out, okay, as all this is going on and people make mistakes, et cetera. But has this have you, too, thrown communications into the system and really kept a clear line of communications going, keeping all your instructors and parents, et cetera, alert to what's going on? Amy?
Yes. Communications is really critical for handling any incident or long-term disruption of service, and COVID certainly falls in the long-term disruption of service category. It's almost like an effective denial of service attack. Communications has been really critical. You know, what to expect, what you need to know, and just how do you contact us? Like, before you click on something, double-check with us. We would rather answer the question, and here's how to reach us. Or, you know, be proactive. Report it as a possible attack. We'll tell you if it isn't, but chances are if you feel like you should report it, it is. So don't click on it. So, yeah, communications has been essential every step of the way, both for the technology components and the non-technology components. I actually think there's a really great opportunity here because we're teaching people how to protect, like, you know, reminding people of basic hygiene. Wash your hands. Wash your hands and, run antivirus on your computer. I mean, these basic computer hygiene and personal hygiene can tie really well together. They're basic life skills at this point. And
That's a very interesting analogy. That's a very interesting analogy in this day and age. And they're both so crazy, and one's related to the other right now. Rod, you obviously agree with all that. I got to tell you, have you seen a lot of mistakes come in from your teachers and et cetera?
You know, I wouldn't call them mistakes, really. I think everybody when this began, we're all having to relearn our jobs. In effect, I've heard many people say that if you've been teaching 1 year or 5 years, it's like everybody feels like their first year.
Yeah,
just because it's brand
good
new.
Of that. Yeah, there's some good come out of that.
No. We're as Amy mentioned about the communication, and you were saying we've certainly been targeting communication toward those things, whether it's some of the online learning specific things. We have instructional coaches in the buildings that are helping teachers with the educational aspects of online learning to develop meaningful lessons and using those tools. And we're working with them on some of the more technical aspects and the settings and configurations and those things. And certainly communicating a tremendous amount with parents and with students to keep them up to speed as throughout this whole pandemic, it seems like if things changed every day, that was a long time. You know, things are changing constantly.
That's so right. Every 5 minutes. Are any teachers in the school building now, Rod?
In our district, and it kind of varies. I've noticed, Larry, by district, but in our district, we gave teachers the option. We're currently based on the health department guidelines in our county. We're fully remote at this point. Teachers are able to come in the building if they choose and teach from their classroom remotely, or they can teach from home.
Yeah. I like that.
There are some districts that have mandated that teachers come in and teach from school. We were one of the ones that have given teachers the option.
Yeah, to me it'd be I'd feel more at home when I was a teacher, and if I were in this situation, to be in my classroom doing this, I'd feel more like I'm in the right place to the kids,
and have
all my resources there, et cetera. Of course, that's up to individuals, but I really do think that's important. With all of this going on, and both of you are so involved, with COSIN, and this is a key, and I want to say something. It's a consortium of school networking, everybody. These are two basically officers of COSIN. They were big project directors, et cetera, technology directors. Okay, and, it's COSIN.org, Consortium of School Networking. If your school district, for some ungodly reason, is not a member of COSIN regarding education technology, your school district, I'm going to say this point blank, is making a huge error. You have got to be a part of COSIN, and you have got to use their resources. They know what they're doing. Right, Amy?
I hope so. No, yes. Yeah. We
know
what we're doing.
Yeah, darn right.
I agree with that, Larry.
Yeah, right. You're making a mistake if you're not in this by yourself. So please, COSIN.org. And on that note, knowing all this is going on and having had the spring to learn where the errors are, et cetera, spring training, if I may. Okay, now that we're back to school for real, what's COSIN got out there as resources? And who wants to take that, Amy or Rod? Should I just swing over to Amy?
Amy, yep.
Amy!
Okay.
Go for it.
So we are back to school. So we have a number of new resources out. We actually built a portion of our site specific to the COVID response. And one of the new components out there is a updated document called Learning Continuity Planning. I think where, we really saw impact in the spring is that a lot of organizations, not just school districts, but just across the board, haven't done continuity planning. A lot of the time it's, that could never happen, or it's not going to happen to us. So really digging into how do we focus on continuity of learning. So this new document is on our COVID site. And continuity really spreads across cybersecurity and across availability. Then we also have some resource documents on privacy and security considerations and response for COVID-19 for working remotely. And we're offering a new series of workshops this fall. So last year we were doing regional cybersecurity summits. And obviously, getting on a plane and getting a large group of people together in one spot right now is not a great idea.
So
we're offering these 3-day, and when I say 3-day, I mean they're 2.5 hours a day because we're sensitive to the fact that people have a lot of work to do. Cybersecurity workshops. The first one is creating cybersecurity and incident response plans in the end of September, beginning of October. And then we're doing advanced cybersecurity for remote learning in November, leveraging cybersecurity resources on a shoestring budget in February. And this one's really focused on what can you do with very little money that helps make you really successful, which, you know, of course, everybody knows school districts aren't rolling in cash. And then the last one for the year is planning and running tabletop incident response exercises. And, you know, one of the biggest challenges of the COVID environment right now is that we're used to IT folks, cybersecurity folks, we're used to if there's an incident, like a ransomware incident, it's in our buildings. We can get to it. And right now we have people spread all over the place. And so you're having to manage incident response even remotely, which is more challenging. So,
if a student is at home and all of a sudden things start flashing and go nuts, they have a virus, should a school district, okay, even though it's on their home computer or maybe it's a school, should they get in touch with the school district right away? Rod, I'll ask you that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We have antivirus software that runs on our devices, whether they're at home or at school. So there should be a level of protection there. But certainly if there's an event of some kind that happens to a device, whether it's in our building or not, we would certainly want to and need to know for
sure.
Yeah,
they should contact the school district IT. That's not going to hurt. Okay, I would hardly recommend that. The other, I want to talk to you guys about something else we haven't touched on this yet. I know we're talking about cybersecurity, but what about access? Okay, I'll go to the college lady, Amy. Okay, Amy, Oregon State, I'm sure, has many students who are not wealthy kids, okay, and it's a good school, and they're spread out all over Oregon or God knows where, okay? Do they all have access? What's happening in that case?
You know, that is a really great question, and access is a critical issue for both higher ed and K-12. You know, at the college level, at the university level, we find that our students have what I will call variable levels of access. They generally have some kind of access, and they're quite creative about getting access. But depending, like if you're in rural Oregon and you're trying to attend classes remotely, that can be a real challenge because there are components of, well, and I say rural Oregon, I mean like 3 miles outside of our capital, you can't get good internet connectivity in some areas.
Wow. Yeah.
Because it takes 3 miles to go from our capital to a vineyard. Rural starts really early. So that can be a real challenge. We are seeing
in that case, they're not going to use computer accessibility. They're going to hear it through the grapevine because they went to a vineyard.
Yeah.
That was a joke.
Good one, Larry. We are seeing a lot of students coming back to town, even though campus is open, but we're not holding classes on campus.
Yeah.
A lot of students are coming back. Our resource spaces are open with social distancing enforced. So
of course.
We have really good bandwidth Wi-Fi on campus. Students can come and use spaces there. But that is a real challenge for students.
It is. It's brutal for everybody. Okay.
And then we also notice, even if you have good access, if it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon and everybody in your neighborhood is online,
There you go. The whole damn thing crashes. It's just unbelievable. What are you finding, Rod? Okay, down this road.
Larry, we've been a one-to-one district with Chromebooks for 6-7 years now. So we're fortunate on the one hand that when it comes to a computing device, all of our students have a device. And we also live in an area where we're fortunate that a vast majority of our families have internet connectivity at home. That said, we do have a diverse population as well. And we have a number of families that don't. And what we've done is a number of years ago applied for a Connect Ed grant with Sprint and got hotspots that we make available to any families that need that access. And much to what Amy just pointed out, we're finding right now, as are a number of districts in the area, those hotspots that we and other districts have provided, those providers have become so overloaded and overwhelmed that the capacity of that hotspot when it initially was put into place has just been drastically cut back to the equivalent of like a 3G connection or a 2G connection, meaning that, yes, there is connectivity there, but the quality of that connectivity when you're trying to get on a Zoom or a Google Meet call is very poor. So us and other districts are now in the process of trying to find some alternative hotspots and other ways. Comcast actually has a program that's called Internet Essentials that they've offered for a number of years, and we've always offered that to our families as well. It's a family that has demonstrated financial need for $9.95 a month can get Comcast Internet service. And what Comcast recently has done is they've subsidized that through the schools, so we can actually make that available to families that have a demonstrated need for free. This all takes time, obviously, to get in place, so it doesn't help the student that needs to get online on a class in a half an hour.
Yeah, but hopefully we figured it out during spring training. Hopefully we figured that out. We found the weak points, and we're better now as the teachers are getting better at teaching this way, et cetera. You know, I've learned something from this, and the key to all this, and I want you to both, if you had to give one tip, from what I've learned from you guys, from both of you, if I put it together, the basic thing is to communicate, okay? If you communicate with the teachers, with the parents, with the administrators, you're going to do a lot better through all this. And if the lines of communication aren't work, regardless of the problem, okay, if you communicate, things are going to get better. And I think that's the number one thing. And on that note, okay, and you guys are terrific IT, your schools, are they speaking with one message to your community, your large community out there now? Amy, is it a coordinated message how to do this so we can avoid the problems of cybersecurity?
Yes, I think that what I'm seeing is a very coordinated effort to be as clear as possible from as many organizations as have that. I will point out there's a capacity issue because we only have about 20% of districts in the country based on our surveys at COSIN that have a dedicated security person, cybersecurity person.
Unbelievable, isn't it? Unbelievable.
It is. So I think for those districts, the message is very clear, you know, because they've got the capacity. And then there are other districts that are also working toward that. I just think yes, there are districts doing that really well. I see, you know, like, for example, my university is doing that really well as well. I think the challenge is that you have districts without resource and capacity. So those districts are struggling. And I want to point out one other thing about communication, which is when we communicate as cybersecurity people, we have to communicate in human being language, not in nerdy technical language. So it's really about the accessibility of the communication.
That was very well said. Yeah. And, you're right. Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Brett.
Larry. No, I would add to that too, much along the same lines. And as complicated as networking technology and security technology is these days, I still heavily rely on my viewpoint that security is largely a human issue. It's not a technical one in terms of the social engineering that occurs. Mm-hmm. Just if if people would use good password management, if multi-factor authentication is available for a particular site or service, if that was used, so many ransomware attacks and other things could be stopped. And the information, you know, a lot of people think that maybe schools aren't as lucrative targets for cyber criminals, but actually we have some pretty valuable information in terms
of
information about our students and about our staff.
Do.
So we have a lot to protect.
And again, I'll say it again, and I'm taking what both of you have said. You got these challenges out there, and we're doing pretty well. And we're going to make mistakes over the next few weeks, but then we're going to correct them all. Okay, the key is communication. Okay, if we can communicate what was said, okay, via this podcast, and I'm sure other things, we're going to be a lot safer out there. And unlike Hartford, which had to postpone the opening of school due to this ransomware attack, I think they're going to open today or tomorrow. Okay, they've kind of corrected it. All right, we just got to get it done. And I'll tell you, the IT folks, congratulations to you. I remind everybody, schools did not shut down. We did educate kids all through the spring. We did it. It wasn't perfect, but we did it. Okay, thanks to guys
for
like
sure.
you. Yeah, Amy.
For
Rob.
Sure. Thanks, Larry.
Pat yourselves on the back.
Thank you,
and everybody else out there, the teachers and the IT directors. It's just an amazing situation, and we're going to get through this together. Thank you both. You're wonderful. Okay, and Amy, please stay safe, okay, from those damn fires.
Thank you, Larry.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You, Larry.
Rod,
it's been a pleasure.
And Rod, you stay safe. Stay off the Eisenhower and with all those other crazy things. Okay, and that boy, traffic's rough out there. Okay, thank you both. Good luck
For sure.
this year. Thanks.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks,
Take care.
Larry.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Amy McLaughlin from Oregon State and Rod Russo from Community High School District 99. Okay, in Illinois. And that's Downers Grove, okay, just outside of Chicago. Nice community over there, okay? I used to live in Chicago for many years, as a matter of fact. Okay, we're going to archive the show, education-talkradio.org. Please go over to our consortium website, the American Consortium for Equity in Education, ACE-ED.org. Our newest issue of Equity and Access magazine just went up on site. It's an online journal. You're going to love it, so join with us for Equity. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. A big thank you to COSIN at COSIN.org. If your school district isn't part of them, you should be. That's all.